session number 9253, reel 16.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, reel 16. Was this stand to a very tense time for you?
Yes, every stand to was very tense. Every stand to. You see, after the night's activity, whatever you happened to be doing, you had been working. Everybody had been out and about all the hours of darkness, and in the winter, of course, the long hours, but in the summer, the short hours. But you're all tensed up when you're out on that job, because although I never found dark hours that you couldn't see at all, you could generally make out if you lay down. If you happened to be in no man's land, for instance, if you lay down close to the ground and look up, you could generally see a form of a man or a tree up against the skyline. So that you're always more or less tensed up. Now then, after stand two, it was daylight then, and that meant that everyone would seek rest. Rest was what you needed, and sleep, if possible. Sentry groups would continue the ordinary routine of one on duty, one on rest, and one asleep. The fellows who had been on working parties would seek any place they could in the trench, where they could rest their feet up on the fire step and try to get past, just to pass the time away in the daylight hours and snatch an hour or two sleep at a time.
Before they went to sleep, would they have a sort of morning meal, a breakfast of sorts before they went to sleep?
There was no such thing as a daily routine of meals. Depended on oneself. It was left to yourself. There was no such thing as issue of breakfast or an issue of dinner time meal. Everybody was on their own as regards food. If you had some grub, if you had an issue of rations, well, you just did what you had and just existed. You only existed, really, you know. No such thing as the regular routine of meals or anything like that. So you rested. Me, for instance, I was always, when I look back, I was always fortunate, you know. Because, I wasn't attached to any particular company. And therefore, I could just, if I saw anybody with a fire or means of a fire, well, I would perhaps make my way there. Now then, the day.
Where would you get your head down for a rest first?
Well, anywhere, any time.
In the front line, or would you go back to the?
Oh no, I never went back. My job was front line all the time. I had my first primary job in the daylight hours was I had a pair of binoculars, and I would put myself in some position behind, so I could see into no man's land and into the front line of the Germans and behind the German lines as well. I used to try and see what I could see. Couldn't see nothing. Everything was dead, of course. I would visit the... We had a sergeant, Boone, B-O-N-E, who was a sniper. It was a first-class shot, and he, like me, was detached from any duties in the company, and during the daylight hours, what he did in the night hours, I don't know. I never saw him. But during the daylight hours, I used to seek him out merely to help to pass the time away and chat with him. Perhaps I was the only one ever did, in fact, because Sergeant Bourne wasn't very well liked by the fellows in our battalion. His job itself didn't tend to make anyone popular. Anybody was a sniper, we thought he wasn't a fair... I mean, although we were at war and everything counts in war, but a fellow who could lie behind some hillock or sniper's plate could lie there and fire at some movable enemy, or even his hand or his head. We didn't think much of those fellows, really. And Sergeant Bourne wasn't a likable fellow, but I used to go and visit him. I remember when I used to go, I should lie alongside of him wherever we happened to be, and he would be lying there with his glasses and his rifle out, and his rifle was rather a special rifle with special attachments to pinpoint an object to fire at, and his notebook and pencil. He was always busy with his notebook and pencil, and I would be lying alongside of him, and he'd say, "There you are, Jack." And he'd fire a shot, and then pencil and paper. I never saw anybody, but he did. And invariably, whenever I lay down alongside of Sergeant Bourne, and I did most days, lie alongside him and watch him at work, he would have a shot, that would fire about half a dozen shots and mark them in his book. I never saw anything to fire at. Naturally, of course, he was using his binoculars, and then he had special points to watch for. You know, the places during the day likely to be used the most would be the latrines. Latrines was always a bit a likely place for a sniper. And, of course, many times a fellow going to visit the latrines would be in a hurry to get there and perhaps wouldn't take the extra care that was necessary. And it was a favourite spot for a sniper to fire at, you know. And, of course, he used to sweep the front line enemy trench for anybody looking over the top, or invariably, letting the relaxation go and show themselves. I suppose he did a good job, Sergeant Bourne, but I don't know, I doubt it, really.
Do you mean he didn't hit much, as much?
Well, I never saw, you see. And you see, I couldn't see the results of what he did, because it was the Germans who was firing at, you see.
Where did you lie when you were lying with him? Were you out in...
Just lying alongside of him.
But where were you?
Generally behind the front line. Behind our front line.
Behind?
Behind, yes. He used to try and get behind, and I used to have to seek him out. I used to go along the trench shouting, "Where are you? Where are you, Alf?" Alf Boone, they called him. And he would tell me.
What effect did German sniping have on you and your unit in your trenches? Was it something you had to watch out?
Nothing on me, because I always took precautions, me. I never worried about them. I never worried much. I didn't worry at all about when I was in the war.
What were the precautions?
But fellas used to get killed by snipers. And I had a relative killed by a sniper. He was shot in the neck, you know, so it must have been a sniper that killed him. But that's a different story.
What precautions would you take? What were the things that you'd do to try and make sure you weren't sniped?
Well, just keep yourself out of putting your head above the height of the trenches. You had to keep your head down. And, of course, you see, the trouble with that was... The Germans, like us, I hope, the German knew the line of trench, and they could, their gunners could put their shell in right on the top of the trench, you know, pop them along, and the pops in our battalion holding a line of trench of about 400 or 600 yards. Germans perhaps. They didn't know how far our trench, our battalion lay. I mean, they're just, all they would know, same as we would know, was a line of trenches. And the German, a gun would be going along with 10 or 20 yards top and shells right on the top of the our front line, which smashed the trench down, you see, the top of the trench, the sandbags, busted sandbags and so on. And every night when darkness came, the front line always had to be repaired, the top of the trench, always, every night.
And these gaps are what the snipers would be watching.
They looked there, you see. Well, now, if one of these gaps in the front line trench was, you had to go along there towards to get into the latrine. The latrine was a favourite spot for the snipers to watch, you know, because if you're going to, if you had to go to the latrine, perhaps if you were caught short and in a hurry to get there, well, you didn't take the necessary precautions. Another thing in the daylight hours was the daily visit of our colonel. Now, our colonel and his adjutant, the regimental sergeant major, and the signalers and so on, they never occupied, in our battalion, they never occupied the front line. They never came into the actual front line with us. They made their battalion headquarters in the reserve trenches behind, or in some dugouts behind our front line. But the colonel, our colonel, Scott Jackson, he would make a visit every day into the front line during the daylight hours. And I used to always meet him because I had kept in touch with the major, with the captain, who was the adjutant, you know, the adjutant to the colonel, is sort of his man of affairs. And I used to, in all my orders and so on, was passed always through the adjutant. And the Captain Pearson was a fine fella. I got on well with him. He used to try to keep me informed of what was going on. So I always joined the colonel when he came up to the front line. As I said, he would be accompanied by his adjutant, his regimental sergeant major, and he was I'll say more about the regimental sergeant major later. He was a man that nobody liked, however.
What was the colonel doing on these rounds?
He used to go into the front line and visit the sentry groups. He never roused anybody out. But anybody that was to be, whose duties were on, the officer, the platoon officer in charge of that particular part of the trench, he would be there to meet him, and he would take him along the front line. And the colonel would see the condition of the trench and speak to the men and so on. You only spent an hour or so altogether.
What would you report to him? What you'd seen or what you'd done in the night? What
me? Oh, yes. I used to try to keep the adjutant acquainted with what was no man's land, you see. Yes, and that was my opportunity of passing information on while we went along. I used to go along the whole front with the party. Yes.
Before this, you'd been observing, you said, with your binoculars. Weren't you at risk of being sniped while you were looking through binoculars?
Oh, yes. It's sun glinting on your glasses. It's a danger, you know.
How did you avoid it? I mean, did you take special
care? You just made the best of it. You did what you could to avoid it. Yes. You never kept your glasses in one particular spot all the time, very long. I mean, if you're watching a certain part of the German trench or behind the trench as well, you never kept on. You know, you never made the mistake of keeping it on because the sun might glint and give you away.
What were you looking for when you were doing
anything?
That?
Anything could happen. Anything it was. So that when you went, even the uneven parts of the ground, any trees or any bushes, any ditches. Ditches especially, I used to look for in no man's land because it was an easy method of movement in no man's land, a ditch. I've been in a ditch and the Germans come along to meet us.
You were looking so that you had a map of no man's land in your head.
That's it, yes.
So that you could see what the Germans might or might not be doing.
That's right, yes. And you see, You would think, I used to say to myself, automatically I would be thinking, well, if the Germans' patrol was coming out, where would they come? Which way would they go? If there was a trench, if it was a low-lying ground, you see, they would come along there. So that when I went out, I was aware of that, you see.
And this is what you'd pass on, if you saw something worthy of note, you'd pass it on to the colonel on his round?
No. He wasn't interested in that, as long as the job was being done. Oh, no, no, you just told him in general what things... Oh, no. He wasn't interested what was going on. That was your job to be interested. Oh, no.
So, but how long during the day would all this take? I mean, how long would you sleep before you started doing that? And then how long would you do the observing?
Oh, it just depended. Depend what sort of... You see, if you had had a bad night, if the trench had been knocked about, well, you had to prepare during the day. You used to fill sandbags during the day. If you're down below, you see, fill sandbags ready for at night to put on ready. So you had a supply of sandbags.
Would you do that?
You
so
might have it. Me, not me.
Would
no.
you get men to do that then?
I know it did. I had nothing to do with that. I never looked at it. No, I only superintended no man's land. I was unique in that respect.
So what else would be going on?
What would be going on? Well, fellas would be trying to do a bit of cooking. When I used to go along and see fellas. You see, I used to be very pally as well, with everybody, you see, because in my work, that is no man's land, it's not every soldier was fit to go out and do jobs out in no man's land. I mean, you might get a high-spirited young fella who might take risks. I had a lance corporal. He always wanted to go with me in no man's land. But I never cared that much for him. In fact, he lost 4 men. So he never got another job off me after that. And I told his officer about it. He got through his high spiritness.
So you'd be talking to people and assessing them?
In the trenches, I used to pick and choose my men to go out and patrol work and that. You see, certain men could be suitable for filling sandbags and building up a supply of sandbags ready for when night came. Another type of fella had to be, same type of fella, really, to do the barbed wire entanglement.
And you'd make these decisions during the day when you were talking?
Yes, you see, because there was always, during trench warfare, you're always losing men, which meant you're having replacements coming out from England. Well, now, one of my jobs was to, every officer that came to the battalion, every officer in the battalion, when he first came to the battalion, he went up into the trenches. He was attached to me for me to take him out into no man's land to get him accustomed to no man's land.
But how much actual sleep would you reckon you get during a day then, roughly?
Me, speaking for myself, I got as much sleep as I possibly could, which might be only 2 or 3 hours in the daylight hours. I never got no sleep at night because my work was at night.
And what was the longest amount of sleep you'd get?
Sleep? Well, most sleep I personally could get might be 2-3 hours at a time. You're lucky if you got a 4. I can't remember any time sleeping as long as that in when I'm in the front line trench. Never.
Would you just have one session of sleep in the
I slept whenever I could during the day. Just any time where I happened to be or where I happened, and it depends on the conditions of the appertaining to the trench and what had been happening the night before and what was to happen that night.
But the longest unbroken would be 4. And
you'd no more than that, at the most, that's right. Generally just a couple of hours or so on, and you got accustomed to that, you know.
What else did you do during the day?
Me? Well, I don't know. I was always on the move. I used to move around. And I used to, as I said, I used to do a lot of observing no man's land and and the German trench.
Why didn't you use a periscope for that? Was it not?
Me, I never used a periscope, no. I was, well, a periscope meant that I would be stationary in the front line. And the periscopes were only used by the sentry groups. They never used, nobody else ever used periscopes. You know what a periscope is, don't you? Yes, it's a long box thing with a mirror looking out over no man's land and then reflected back into another mirror, which reflected down at the bottom of the long box thing, and there you could see by looking in there what was happening in no man's land.
But this was no use to you?
Me? No, no use to me. Not. I never bothered with it.
What else would you do during the day then, if you can remember?
I don't know, it depended what the job was, what was coming off that night. I mean, for instance, if it was some barbed wire entanglements had been damaged, well, used to hunt about, sometimes you would find a roll of barbed wire in a shell hole behind the trenches. And if somebody would say, oh, I've seen a roll of barbed wire, and they used to get that humped along ready for the job at night. Your piles of sandbags, you hunted them up, you see, because when a working party was filling sandbags, you know, they used, any that was left over was just flung about. And there was always soldiers ready to pinch a couple of sandbags to sit on and sleep on the fire step. And sometimes we had to go along the fire step and take sandbags which were already placed on the fire step and which were not being used at the time. There was always plenty of work like that to be done, you know. And it depended a lot on the officer, the platoon officer, who was in charge of that particular part of the trench, you see. Yeah, they say the colonel had his staff behind in the reserve trench at his battalion headquarters. And perhaps his company, the company commander would be with them there, perhaps. But in the trench itself, the only officers you found was a very junior officer, in what they call a platoon officer. And some of them were very keen, some of them very raw. You take a fellow, for instance, just being at home, and I'd been an office worker, and come and thrown into no man's land like that, you know, everything was strange to him. Perhaps he had never been out in the dark before, except on the street with lamps.
Besides sleeping, did the troops have any form of relaxation or recreation? I mean, did they play any games or sing it while they were in the front line, or crown an anchor?
What do I call it? Howsy. The only game they had. No, you know, when you went out on rest, you know.
No, I mean in the line, did they?
No, nothing. Well, you were separated. You were never together. You were never together. You see, the only people that were together was the sentry group, or if there was a dugout, it would get filled up with some. If the officer didn't need it, if there was extra dugouts, you know, or sometimes more than one dugout, you see. And the officer always had his dugout, and there was any others where they'd got filled up with the men who could get in. No, there was no. You see, during the daylight hours, you were just where you happened to be, and you rested, slept, and wrote your letters, very important thing. Those who wrote letters. I mean, we had a fella in our company who couldn't write, Billy Bacon. Private Billy Bacon. He couldn't write. And, of course, he couldn't read. Now, then, when I found out, I took on the job of writing letters. But I wrote home to his girlfriend, and home he had a girlfriend. Bill, he was a big fella. He must have been 6'1" or 2". Big, broad, a simple type of fella. And I used to write home as if it was him writing. What happened after I got wounded, I don't know. The letters home would stop, you see.
Would you read the letters from
the
girl?
Oh, I had to, the letters from the girl, oh yes. Our father was a publican. He had a pub, about his girlfriend, in the village of Choppenden, where when I passed after the war, I often thought of calling in, but I never did. I should have, because he died with consumption later, you know, when consumption was prevailing after the war. But I passed the pub, our father was the pub owner. Often thought of inquiring about Billy Bacon.
What about your own writing home?
At home?
What about you writing home? Who did you write to?
I wrote a postcard every day. A field card, they called them field cards. And on one side of a postcard, you'd put the address on. The other side was a list of printed words. Say, I am well, I am not well, I am in hospital, I am not in, and you cross out knots and so on. And I have been wounded, or I have not been wounded. You cross out what applied. And I have received your parcel. I have not received your parcel. I have received your letter. I have not received your letter. And you crossed out what you didn't apply, you know. That was the postcard.
And you'd send that home?
I sent one every day because I had an ample supply, and I used to dish them out, you see.
Who did you send it to?
My job being free, I was a suitable NCO to do that. You see, ordinary sergeants and corporals, they were stationary. They would be in one part of the trench the whole time when they were in the trenches. Me, I travelled anywhere, you see. And it was in the daylight hours in the trenches when fellas had most time to write home. Because when you went back out of the trenches to rest, it was a different matter, you see, because you... First day you wanted to sleep and you wanted to be fed and so on.
So you'd send... Who did you actually send your cards to? Just to your family, or would you send it to
just more? My mother. No, I sent them... I had a girlfriend. I sent them occasionally to her.
What about normal letters? Did you send them?
No. I wrote green envelope letters.
What were they? In the trenches you wrote them?
Well, I had a supply of green envelopes. Well, now, to send home an ordinary letter... With an ordinary envelope, a white envelope, it had to be censured by your own officer. Well, now, nobody liked that, you see, letting your officer know what your intimate family life was. So you had these green envelopes. Now, a green envelope meant that you could write your letter, put the letter in the green envelope, and that green envelope letter would be censured, but not by your own officer. It would be taken down to battalion headquarters and censured by somebody there, so that your own officer wasn't allowed to receive the green envelope to censure.
So you didn't send normal letters, you always sent green
envelopes? Me, I know about normal. I always sent a green envelope, yes.